This is Relationship Truth Unfiltered, a podcast that ditches destructive traditions and delves into real biblical teaching about relationships. Welcome, I'm Julie Sedanko, here with relationship expert Leslie Vernick. Today we're going deep on the topic of boundaries. What are they? How do you make them? And more importantly, how do you stick to them? Leslie, we've had a lot of questions about boundaries from our Conquer members that I want to ask, but first, can you give us the basic definition of what a boundary is so that we're all on the same page?
Yeah, I think there is a lot of confusion about boundaries because we think of boundaries as keeping people out or walls, and that's not what boundaries are. So boundaries do two things. First, they create identity. This is me. This is you. This is not me. This is not you. So the easiest way I can kind of give you a visual for boundaries is the United States. So picture your map in the United States that you got in grammar school, and all these little dotted lines are around the states. Every state of the union is different. Colorado is not the same as Alaska. Hawaii is not the same as Maine. Every state has its own flag, has its own flower, has its own motto, has its own license plates. Every state has its own government. And although we work as a unit in the United States, each state has its own way of doing things, its own culture, its own identity. And so we don't have big walls. Like there's not a wall that you have to go through to get to Utah from Arizona. There's just a little divide in the landscape that says, welcome to Utah or welcome to Arizona. But if I'm living in Arizona and I drive over to Colorado, and I'm carrying a gun in my car, there's different laws in Colorado that identify Colorado and what Colorado is willing to tolerate and what Colorado is not willing to tolerate. Like in Arizona, I can carry a gun in my pocket. I don't even need to have a license to carry. In Colorado or other states, there might be different rules or laws because they have different identities and different responsibilities. And so this is the best way that we can define it so I don't have to go through a gate or Utah is open for me to visit, but if I violate their boundaries, what's okay in Utah, what's okay in Colorado, even if it's okay in Arizona, then they have a right to have some consequences for me violating their rules of their identity. So in the same way as people or neighborhoods, like my house is my house. And so it defines me, how I decorate. I get to decorate the way I want to decorate. Nobody decides for me how I decorate my house. Nobody decides for me what food I eat as an adult, right? I have my sense of self. What's my value? What are my values? What's important to me? What's not important to me? Those are part of what defines me as me. And then what am I responsible for? And what am I not responsible for? That's the other section of boundaries. So if I were going back to the state example, Arizona is responsible for Arizona. Utah is not responsible for Arizona. Now, that doesn't mean Utah wouldn't help Arizona if Arizona was having a major forest fire, right? They would offer to help, but they're not responsible to come in and rescue Arizona, right? They can be friendly and offer, but that's not their responsibility. I'm responsible to maintain my house and my yard. I don't have a big fence between my house and the neighbor's yard. We sort of know where our boundary lines are. So I take care of my landscaping. She takes care of her landscaping. I don't go in and clean her house. I'm not responsible to clean her house. Now, if she asked me to help her, I could help her, but I'm not responsible to worry about her house or her bills or taking care of her. She's responsible for that. Again, if she asked and said, hey, I'm going to be out of town. Can you do this? I'd be happy to be a good neighbor. So the same thing is with our person. I'm responsible for me and my thoughts and my behaviors and my feelings. I'm not responsible for you and your thoughts and your behaviors and your feelings. I can care about your feelings, but I'm not responsible for them. So if I get angry over something you did, you didn't make me angry. I am angry and I need to take responsibility for that. And what I do with my anger, so if I punch you because I'm angry because I don't like what you said, it's not your fault that I punched you. It's my anger, my hands. I'm responsible for what I do with my anger and my hands, not you. Even if you provoked me, I'm still responsible. And I think this is where it gets all messy in relationships, because we can see, well, you did provoke me, or you were wrong. And so we then justify losing control of ourselves, and it's your fault. When in fact, if we're really being healthy and we understand I'm responsible for me and you're responsible for you, yes, you provoked me. And now what am I going to do with that? That's my responsibility.
That leads really perfectly into some of these practical questions that we've been asked. And I think they'll also show that some people have a mixed up idea of boundaries. Someone had asked how she can put boundaries in place for how her husband can treat her or neglect the household duties. Now, obviously, I think you've established that you can't put a boundary on somebody else, but you can set a boundary for yourself. So the person's issue is that her husband struggles with trauma-based depression. And so she'll bring up an issue and he's triggered and feels a lot of shame. She doesn't want to hurt him, but she's also worn out from being forced to do everything around the house as well as being neglected as a spouse. So how can she use boundaries in this kind of situation?
Well, there's lots of different answers practically on how she could use boundaries. But the first thing that she needs to do is establish some. But it's not around him.
Exactly.
Because that's controlling. You can't, like, I can't say to my neighbor, even if she leaves her house a mess, I'm setting a boundary on you. You need to clean your house once a week and you need to take care of the garbage in your yard.
Right?
Like, she's not going to do that. I have no power to enforce boundaries over her, right?
Somebody said recently, I set a boundary on my husband. I said, you can't call me that anymore. It's like, well, good luck with that.
Good luck with that. Yeah. So I think this is where we've gotten all confused on what a boundary is. A boundary is what you will do or what you won't do, who you are, who you aren't.
It's like your own personal rules for yourself. That's how I think of it.
Yes, exactly. And so I will eat, I will drink wine, I won't drink wine. I will drink one glass of wine, I will drink not two glasses of wine, or I won't drink and drive. I can't control what you drink, and I can't control whether you drink or drive. But if you drink and drive, I won't drive with you, right? That's a boundary. Hey, if we're going to a party, your habit is that you drink three or four drinks, and I just want to let you know that I've established a boundary for my, and you wouldn't use these words necessarily, but I've established a boundary for myself, and that I'm not going to drive home with you if you drink more than one drink, unless you let me drive, right? So I'm not willing to put myself in the car with you if you've drank more than one drink. I'll call an Uber, or I'll stay at my friend's house for the night. Right? So you get to decide what you're going to do with you. Now, is he going to like that? Probably not. So here's for the housekeeping thing. So let's just, and there's lots of ways to do this. So don't take this as a script that works for you. It might not work for you. You have to establish what your boundary is. But if I were in that situation, this is what I would say. I would say, hey, we've got a lot of tasks around to do the house. Are there certain ones that you're willing to do? Are there certain tasks that you really would enjoy or be willing to take responsibility for? So we have laundry, we have grocery shopping, we have bill paying, we have kids, we have lawn, we have car maintenance. I would, you know, kind of write them all down. And can you circle ones that you're willing to take responsibility for? So that would be one thing. And, or these are the ones I'm willing to take responsibility for. Are there any that you're willing to take responsibility for? And if not, then I'd like to hire someone to take responsibility for those, because I can't take responsibility for any more than these. Okay, so that would be one way of some boundaries. This is what I'm willing to do. This is what I'm not willing to do, without shaming him. Just, hey, they have to get done. So if you don't want to take responsibility, I can accept that. But then we've got to pay someone to do that.
Now, if he gets all triggered and ticked off and throws a tantrum, how do you handle that?
Well, you can't control his feelings, right? All you can do is do two things: to say, how might we have a conversation where you feel safe? And I'd like to accommodate that as best as I can. I understand you're suffering and I don't want to on purpose do something that would hurt you or harm you. So how is it best to have it in writing for you? Is it best for keep it short? You know, is it best to keep it just functional on household stuff? How might we best have a conversation? Because this stuff needs to be talked about, and let him decide. Those are his boundaries. It would be best for me to do it in this way, this way, this way. And you can accommodate that or not, depending on how you feel, right? But I think those are the conversations that you need to have so that you're showing respect to him and inviting him to speak up for himself about what he needs. And this is what I need. You know, all these jobs are too much for me. I can't do them all. Are you saying you don't want to do them? And then who can we hire to do this? Because I can't do the lawn and work full time and take care of three kids and do the laundry and the groceries. I'm just out of gas. I'm just out of gas. And so I understand, I show compassion toward you're not able to, but how might we fix this? And if you don't even want to think about it, I'll just take responsibility for it to hire. But that, so because I want it done versus be resentful that you won't do it.
Yes.
Right. So those are your choices you have. Because if he were in intensive care in the hospital, that's what you would do. You would take responsibility for it and you would just say, he can't do this right now. I'm going to have to hire someone to do this. I'm going to have to, and I'm not going to just waste my energy being resentful that I have to do it because you won't or you can't. Right? I'm just going to take care of this so that I can move on and not get stuck and just, it shouldn't be this way. This isn't fair. Well, you're right. It's not. But are you going to stay there and get stuck there? Or are you going to say, okay, how do I get myself to a place where I can live with it? So that would be one thing. The second boundary would be around maybe his stuff. So I might say things like, and this might be a broader issue than just this person's problem. Let's say that your husband's a slob and you're a neatnik and it's driving you crazy. It's driving you crazy and you've picked up his stuff and you're resentful on that. He throws his clothes all over the floor and you're picking it all up on laundry day and you're doing all his wash and you're just bitter about that. And you're saying, I want to set some boundaries. Or you can say you can't throw your stuff on the floor, but that's not going to work because No. You can't control him.
No, it doesn't work with my teenager.
Right. So here's the rule. Hey, you know what? I am so tired of being resentful and nagging you about your clothes. They're your clothes. And so if you want them clean, they need to make it in the hamper. I'm happy to wash them. I'll even fold them, but I'm not going to put them in your drawers and I'm not going to pick them up off the floor. So if you want clean clothes, get them in the hamper. If you don't care, it's okay with me. You can wear dirty clothes. You can pick them off the floor and wear them wrinkled, smelly, however you want to show up at school. That's up to you or at work. But I'm not doing wash that doesn't end up in the wash, in the hamper. So if it's not in the hamper, it's not getting washed. That's my boundary. And you wouldn't say it quite like that's my boundary, but you would just say, this is what I'm willing to do. I'm willing to do the wash. I'm not willing to go through the whole house and pick up everybody's clothes all over the floors.
Well, I know like with my one daughter, we would battle a lot over her room and it was really damaging the relationship. And it seemed like every time we were around each other, we were arguing about her room. So I finally just said, you know, she feels like she's too busy to get it done. And I finally said, okay, if you can't do your chores, that's fine. Your sister will do them, but then you need to pay her. And she was perfectly fine with that. And that's been the agreement ever since. And her sister is very happy because she's earning some money and I don't have to nag the other kid to do her chores, you know? So there are things that you can do as far as boundaries and household chores and that type of thing. Gets a little tougher, I think, Leslie. And this was another question. What kind of boundaries can a person have when your husband chooses porn over true intimacy?
You have to decide what you're willing to put up with and what you're not willing to put up with, right? That's your decision. So if you are not willing to be intimate sexually with someone who is watching women virtually and having physical orgasm with them, and you're not willing to collude with that, you're not willing to be with that, you're not willing to have a sexual relationship with someone who chooses to do that, then you need to say that. You need to say, hey, I don't know why you choose to do that when I'm available to you. And we, at least from my perspective, we've had a fairly decent sex life. So I don't know why you're choosing to do that. I didn't think you were the kind of man who wanted to get caught in those kind of problems, but I can't control you. I can only control me. And for me, this is a deal breaker. This is a deal breaker for me that I don't want to be married to a man who chooses to look at other women masturbate at night three times a week. I'm totally disgusted by it. And so if that's the way you want to be and you're comfortable with that, I'm not judging you. I'm not saying anything other than for me, it's a total turnoff. And I don't know where we go from here in our marriage because I'm not willing to continue a long-term relationship with someone who prefers to do that than engage. So you decide. So he gets to decide the kind of man he wants to be, which is his right to do. And I know for so many women, you're right. It's not fair because he didn't show up that way when you got married, or you wouldn't have married him probably, right? But I think this is where we have to be really honest and also willing to let someone go. It's like Jesus with Judas. Hey, Judas, I invited you to be a disciple of mine. And now you got to decide, whose side are you on? And what do you really want to do? And I'm not willing to play this game anymore. You can't eat at my table and betray. You go do what you're going to do, or repent, basically. And he went, did what he wanted to do. So I think we have to get over the notion, even when we're married to someone, we can't control them. Even when we're a parent of a child, especially as they're getting older, you can't even control a two-year-old. You can't control a two-year-old. They decide to stop crying. How many times have you said, you better calm down, you just have to stay in your room, and they're kicking the door and they're tearing their bed apart because you can't control them. And so the sooner you come to peace with they have to control them, you can have consequences, like you can't come out of your room and you can't hit mommy, and I won't live like this. If this is what you want to do, I'm out, right? Those are the places where you have to be strong enough in yourself to say, this is what I will do. This is what I won't do. I mean, I remember getting married, even dating. If I were in a longer term relationship with any man or even a girlfriend, I've never had this situation, because I've always said up front, even to my children as they were growing up, this is what I will do. I will have a conversation with anyone about anything. I will not allow myself ever to be abused emotionally again. So if my children started calling me names or cursing at me, it was like, boop, time out. I'm not having this conversation. I'm not having this conversation. And those were my boundaries. I'm just not. And so because of that, I've been spared, I'm sure, relationships with could have gone the other way, that if you don't have those boundaries. And so what are you willing to tolerate? What are you not willing to tolerate? And, you know, I'm not saying what your boundary should be. I'm just saying you need one. So if you're willing to hang out with a man and partner with a man who is in that problem and willing, and you're willing to do that because of other reasons, maybe you've got small children together and you're not financially ready to be on your own and all those kind of reasons, then understand what your boundaries are. Hey, if this is a long-term problem from him, I might not be willing to do this long-term. So I better get to school and get some schooling and get prepared to work full-time, because I don't know that this marriage is going to last a lifetime. Mm-hmm. He is married to someone else right now, right? He's got another love. He's been unfaithful, and he doesn't look all that ready to change that. So how long are you going to waffle between two places, right? You have to put your stake in the ground when you're setting a boundary. This is who I am. This is what I will do. This is what I won't do. And sometimes we only learn that through mistakes that we've made, right? So I set a boundary on the drinking thing when we went out with a couple that we knew pretty well, but we didn't know he drank so much and had three cocktails during dinner, and he was a driver. And it was like, what do we do? And we didn't do anything because we hadn't set a boundary. We hadn't thought about that. And now we're sitting ducks in the back seat with a man who wasn't obviously intoxicated. If he was, I would have set the boundary, but he wasn't. And so it's so hard to speak up for yourself and say, hey, you know, you had three drinks at dinner, can I drive? You know, it was just really hard because this was a couple from our church. And it was like, you know, you don't want them to think you're some sort of prudes or sticklers or whatever. And so my husband and I are in the back seat thinking,
are we going to die?
Yeah, are we going to die? Our kids are home with the babies. What are we going to do? It was a terrifying car ride home. And after that, I set a boundary. Hey, I am never going to do that again. I'm never going to allow myself to be a victim of someone else's choices, that if I can help it.
I've been there and ended up calling the cops on a friend because she was so obviously drunk and was going to leave me there and drive home. And I thought, if she kills somebody, I'm not going to live with that guilt. So I did. It was terrible, Leslie, but yeah, those boundaries are so important. Do you wonder whether your marriage is just difficult or if it's actually destructive? Leslie has a quick start guide that will help you answer that very question. Not only that, if you find your marriage is in the destructive category, this guide will give you concrete biblical answers on your next steps. Go to leslievernick.com/start to get your free quick start guide and start your journey to personal growth that will impact all of your relationships. Let's talk about a controlling spouse. A woman has to account for every penny she spends, has to get permission to purchase things. Maybe she's given an allowance. How can she set a boundary when she doesn't have any access to the money?
So when you enable a dysfunctional pattern to happen for a long period of time, it's really hard to turn that ship around. So I would just say, you know, whether it's your child and you've allowed them to throw temper tantrums and now you're going to stop, or you've allowed them to disrespect you, or you've allowed them to not listen to you forever and ever and ever, and now you're trying to turn that ship around, understand this is going to take some time. So the first step that you need to say to yourself is, this is not healthy. I am not a child who gets an allowance. I am a grown-up in this marriage. And legally, I am a joint partner financially, even if I'm not working. So don't let someone diminish your value and worth because you're not contributing to the money pot. If you're a stay-at-home mom, to pay for someone to do what you do would be $100,000, you know, depending on how much you do and how many kids you have. But just imagine what you do and how much money that you are worth. So do not ever let yourself be in a position where I don't have a voice and I don't have a choice. When you date someone, you need to talk about that. How's money going to be handled? And is my name on the account? And why not? And that needs to be discussed premaritally as well as right away. Because once the pattern gets established and you're silent, then you're compliant. You're compliant. Whether you're passively compliant or actively compliant, you're compliant. And so the pattern gets worse because you've got no consequences. You've got no boundaries. You've got no statement that says, nope, this isn't happening here. So for those of you who are engaged or pretty young in your marriage, I think it's early enough to say the pattern isn't going to get established this way. But let's say it's been this way for your whole marriage. I think it's time for you to have a tough conversation with your spouse and say, hey, we've been married 30 years and I don't know what's going on with our finances. You kind of treat me as if I'm a little girl who gets an allowance and has to account for every penny and you spend what you want. I have no idea what you spend. That feels really unequal to me. I talk to my girlfriends and their marriage isn't like that. And I've come to realize I've allowed myself to kind of be infantilized in this marriage, or I treated like a little kid that daddy controls all the money and I don't like it. I'd start there and see how his response is. So if his response is, well, why didn't you say something? You know, my dad always controlled the money and that's what men did in my family. If you didn't like it, why didn't you speak up? Maybe he would say that and you'd be like, oh, okay. It's time to speak up, right? We can change this. Or who do you think you are? I'm the head of the house. I make all this money. You have no voice. You have whatever, you know, just putting you down for that. So I think this is where you need to speak up and say to yourself, well, actually, because we're married, I've contributed to this family. And so here's where you have to not let someone devalue you by you not devaluing you. Hey, I've been a stay-at-home mom. I've been a homeschool mom. To pay to put our kids in a private school, to pay to have someone clean our house, to pay to have someone do everything I do, you'd be paying, you know, probably close to, we'd be paying close to $100,000 a month, a year to do all that. And I've done that. And I've done that gladly. I thought we were co-laborers in this family. You were contributing to the money pot. I was contributing to the household pot and the child-rearing pot. Both of us were contributing. It's not that you were contributing and I was just taking. That's not how it was working. We were both contributing. So I think we both need to have a say. And I'm not willing to be treated like a child anymore in this relationship. So that's your, this is what I'm willing to do. This is what I'm not willing to do. And then see what happens. I'd like to see what's going on in our bank accounts. What if you dropped over dead tomorrow? I wouldn't know what was going on. So you don't have to talk about divorce or anything like that. My husband and I have had that talk because I willingly let him control things because I don't want to mess around. I don't even like to look at the checkbook. I haven't balanced a checkbook in 30 years.
I'm so jealous.
I know how I manage our company's money, all of that, but I just don't want to. But I've said to him recently, I need to know where everything is. Every time he goes away, I said, did you make sure everything's in the book? Because if something happens to you, I need to know where it is, how to get into it, how to find it, how to manage it. So I think those are really important conversations to have for so many of our women who are, you know, empty nesters and you still don't know what's going on, to say, hey, something happened to you. I need to know what's going on and I need to learn some of these things. And I think your husband needs to learn them too. If he's not learned how to turn on the stove or the washer, he needs to learn those things too. So he's not so helpless, so that each of you can share that burden. But if he's still putting his foot down, I think that's where you need to get some wisdom. What are your next steps? What are your next steps? Because legally, you are entitled to half of everything that you've accumulated together. But if you don't even know what that half is, or he's funneling tons of money out of that half to another woman, to gambling, to porn, to other bad things that you wouldn't want your money to go to, then what is your boundary here? And not around him, but around you.
That's good. That's really helpful stuff. What about a husband who's picking fights, cursing? What are some boundaries she could put around there?
Mm-hmm. Well, she can't control his temper, right? I want to say this again. You cannot control his temper. All you can control is whether or not you're going to be around him when he is expressing his temper. And what happens, you know, again, some of you can't leave because his temper will escalate and he'll grab you by the throat and say something or do something that's really scary. So if I'm in someone's presence who scares me and I know they don't care how I feel, I'm not going to argue with them, right? So if someone's holding a gun to my head, I'm not saying, sir, I have a boundary around that. I'm not allowing that to happen right to myself, right? I'm not going to. So just understand, be safe. Be safe. That's your first concern. If someone's raging and acting out of control, your first task is to say, how do I get safe? How do I get my kids safe? How do we call 911? How do we get out of the house? How do we get to safety? That's your first concern, not trying to argue with him or calm him down or any of those kind of things. You just need to get out of Dodge or get to safety or be as compliant as you need to be safe.
Yeah. Agree with whatever he wants you to do.
Right. Agree with whatever he wants if he's holding you hostage. That's what you do until you can get out. But that is no marriage.
That is not a marriage. You're right.
So please don't hear me ever say that you argue with a lunatic who's raging. You do not. Right? You show a lot of empathy. I see you're really angry. What can I do to help you calm down? I'm so sorry you feel that way. Because, not just because it's the right thing to do in some situations, sometimes it's the right thing to do because if you don't do that, you're just putting gasoline on the fire and it's getting hotter and more dangerous mm-hmm. for you and the kids. So do not argue. The Bible tells us a gentle answer turns away wrath. A harsh word stirs up strife. So hostage negotiations, police, people in SWAT units, all of that are trained to de-escalate a conflict. Mm-hmm. So if he's in a bad place, please read some about that and learn to calm yourself down so that you don't create a dangerous or more dangerous situation for yourself and your kiddos. But let's just say it's not to that level. Okay. I think you can say, hey, I see that you're really upset and I would be happy to talk to you when you calm down a little bit. But right now, I think both of us need to take, you know, a time out so that you get a chance to calm down and be able to express yourself in a way that I can hear you. So it's not like I'm not willing to hear you or you have no point to make, but right now it's too hard to hear you the way that you're screaming at me. Right. So that would be a boundary that I'm not willing to listen. I'm not willing to stay here and have an argument like this. I'm willing to have a discussion, but I'm not willing to have a knockdown, drag out fight like we've had in the past. Not willing to do that anymore. It's only damaging to you. It's damaging to me. It's damaging to our kids who watch it. It's damaging to our marriage. Not willing to do that anymore. And so if he provokes you to do it, this is where you need to practice something we call gray rock. In that it's like he's provoking a gray rock. So if he were provoking a gray rock, oh, you just don't care. Oh, what kind of Christian woman are you? You won't even have a conversation with your husband. You know what? The kids are going to think that you don't love me. Whatever he pokes you with, how are you going to respond? How would a gray rock respond?
They wouldn't say much. Yeah.
They wouldn't. No, they would just say, well, you know, I'm sorry you feel that way. 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 I'm not talking like this. I'm sorry you feel that way. You're going to be as boring as possible.
Kind of like when you're on the stand pleading the fifth, you just, that's all you say.
And the lawyers are provoking, trying to get you to say something they get you with. Because then you're the bad guy. And that's what they do. Mm-hmm. And so you're going to have to be getting some help to calm yourself down, to breathe, to, you know, talk to yourself inside saying, great rock, whatever you need to say inside, so that you're not letting him poke you into a situation that then you explode in rage. And then, and you call me angry and you call me crazy, kids, right? Look at your mom, she's a lunatic, right? And that is a gotcha moment. And he will do it to you. If he's an unhealthy person, he will do that to you. Don't mm-hmm. let him. You get to right. decide. And all you, if it's getting to you where you can't do it anymore, what you need to say is, you know what? I have to go to the bathroom. I have to go to the bathroom. We all have limited capacity. And when someone is needling us, provoking us, and we can't gracefully get out of there, mm-hmm. most people will respect, I got to go to the bathroom. You don't have to say why. You just need to say, I got to go to the bathroom. I can't stay here anymore. I got to go to the bathroom. And you just get up and go. And you close the door, hopefully lock it. And you take some deep breaths. You calm down. You pray. And if you have to, you call a friend and say, I need help. You need to come here, or call 911 if it's escalating. And I'm unsafe. But you go to the bathroom and lock the door, or just shut the door. And sit on the toilet if you have to. I don't, you know, sit on the toilet if you have to, stay, turn on the shower, if you, whatever you have to do to get some space to get away from it.
Quick question, and I'm just going to ask a couple more, but this, I think, shows some of the confusion people have around boundaries. She says, my husband agrees to boundaries, then breaks them and lies about making the boundaries. What's a boundary to address this? Now, there's a lot of confusion all over that. Another person can't break a boundary that's yours, correct?
Right. So when you set a boundary, you're the responsible one to enforce it. So if I say, hey, I'm not going to listen to this kind of conversation anymore. Or I'm not going to live with someone who watches porn. Oh, stop porn. And he breaks that and watches porn again. That's not your boundary. Your boundary is, I won't live with this. Right? So you are the person in charge of setting your boundaries, and you are the person to in charge of enforcing your boundaries. So if I carry a gun into New York City, if they don't enforce that boundary, I get away with it, right? So we've got laws on the land, you know, in every state that people aren't enforcing. And so guess what's happening? It's getting worse and worse and worse. So it's not that the boundaries aren't going to get tested or broken. It's a matter of, hey, what are the consequences if you violate my boundary, right? It's not a matter of them being in charge of that. You're in charge of your boundary and what happens when it gets violated. So if my boundary is, hey, I don't want to hear cursing and I'm not having a conversation with someone who does that to me, and they start doing that to me, then two things. One is they've disrespected my boundary. That's information. And I'm going to have a consequence of, hey, I'm not talking on the phone anymore, or I'm leaving the conversation now because I told you I can't have a conversation like this. And I turn around and start walking away. Now, if they grab me by my shirt and say, no way, you're having this conversation, sit down. Well, then I'm going to sit down because I'm going to be compliant because now I'm scared. And I'm going to listen, but I'm also saying, wow, this is information. This is a dangerous person. How am I going to get out of here? How am I going to get out of this situation? How am I going to get out of this marriage? How am I going to get to safety? That's what I'm thinking while I'm being compliant. I'm not like, oh, my boundary didn't work and I just have to endure that. No, I do not. I might temporarily, just like if someone kidnaps me and I'm in a car, I might have to temporarily sit there till I can figure out, like, how am I going to get out? How am I going to put a gas station, you know, alert, whatever the sign is that you say, help.
Right.
You know, I'm going to be calming myself down so I can figure out what my next right step is. But when someone blatantly disrespects your boundary, here's a small example. I had a client who lived in a neighborhood with her in-laws. You know, they had houses and siblings, you know, they bought a couple lots and then they built houses. And so the siblings all lived in the same neighborhood. And all the siblings and the parents felt totally comfortable walking in each other's house.
Oh.
until one of the siblings married someone who didn't. You know, so it's not a right or wrong issue. It's, hey, this doesn't sit well with me for you just to, I don't want to come out of my shower and see my mother-in-law standing there.
Right.
You know, I just want you to call me and knock. Do not walk in my house. Well, they just didn't respect that. So now what do?
Change the locks.
She locks the door. Yeah, she changes the locks. And is her husband mad? Yeah, because we all do this. I don't feel comfortable with this. This isn't my, I didn't grow up that way. I'm not comfortable with having your family just walk in my house whenever they want to. So that's my boundary. And if they keep disrespecting me and violating that, then that causes some marriage issues because my husband's not giving me the right to have a boundary in my own home, right? And so now what does that look like? And so anytime someone violates your boundary, whether in a little way or a big way, that gives you information. And if you allow that to continue to happen, what you're saying is you're allowed to disrespect my boundary and it doesn't matter. I don't matter. And I might not matter to you, but you must matter to you,
mm-hmm.
right? So if my boundary is being violated, that just tells me I don't matter to you. If you're yanking me back by my shirt because I don't want to listen to your cursing at me and you force me to sit in the chair, that's giving me information. Whoa, you're far more dangerous than I thought you were. And I don't want to live with you anymore.
Leslie, do you always need to communicate a boundary? Like, if you do this, I'm going to walk out of the room? Or can you just have it internally knowing this is my boundary?
I think it depends on how safe you are in saying it. But I think, you know, I wouldn't communicate it like, this is my boundary. I think that sets people's teeth on edge to just push those buttons. I might say things like, I'm really not comfortable having a conversation when our voices are escalated and you're cursing at me. And I can't do that. So I'm going to go calm down and I hope you do too. And I would just turn around and do that. So it's not like, this is my boundary. I would say it more in a gentle way and see if they respect that. But if people continue to disrespect your no, I'm not comfortable with that. I don't like that. I mean, if you were in a restaurant and you said, I don't really want sushi. I don't like sushi. And someone just grabbed you and shoved it in your mouth. What would you do? Like, that's not okay.
No.
But that's sometimes what we live with, is people totally disrespect. And then you're saying, okay, I have to chew it. No, you don't. You could spit it right out in the napkin and get up and leave. I'm not eating out with you anymore. That's totally disrespectful. You don't shove something in my mouth, right? And again, you don't say that my boundary is you can never shove. You know, you don't talk that way. But that's the mindset that you need to have is, I am respecting myself. I'm not allowing myself to be treated this way. I can't control you, but I can control me. And I'm not going here anymore with you.
Well, and I think a boundary is if you're ever physical with me, if you do grab me by the neck or if you do hit me, I'm calling the police.
Right.
That's your choice. That's within your control.
And this goes back to our previous podcast about, I feel bad, you know, I'm an empath. And so I don't want them to go to jail. I don't want them to lose their job. And understand that consequences are sometimes severe and sometimes they do have ripple consequences. Like, hey, if you end up in jail, you might lose your job.
Yeah.
Right. And that might be the best, worst thing that ever happened to you.
The best, worst thing. That's good.
That sometimes it's an awful consequence and it wakes you up. Sometimes, you know, you're stupid and you pay a high price for being stupid. It's called stupid tax. And then you're not so stupid anymore. And so when we put pillows around people so that they, like if your kid, my kid paid stupid tax in high school when he didn't study for chemistry and failed chemistry and we took him out of his private school and put him in the public school and he didn't like that at all. And he studied hard and got back into his private school to graduate. But guess what? He didn't pay any more stupid tax in college.
Yeah.
And we didn't pay stupid tax by paying for college that he didn't study at. So I think those are, sometimes they're hard lessons that people learn, hard consequences. If you do this, this is what's going to happen. But they're lessons that you learn and you don't do it again. Like when you put your hand on the hot stove, it's meant to burn you so that you take your hand away and you don't do it again. And when we cushion those experiences and say, oh, I'm not going to press charges, or oh, I'm going to bail him out of jail, or oh, I'm going to clean up all his vomit and pretend like he didn't have a drunken orgy party last night and make a mess of the house. I'm going to make it look like it was just a little party. You're not letting him or her see the results of their foolishness or their sin and the impact it's having on you. And therefore, you don't get enough information. If someone hits me and I say, oh, it's okay, it didn't hurt, but they broke my arm, I'm not being truthful. If you broke my arm, I'm going to say, ouch, and you broke my arm. And if they don't care about the impact they caused me, you broke my heart when I caught you in porn, and they don't care about that, that is information for you about the quality of this person and the quality of the relationship.
I was just talking today, actually, with somebody who's dealing with a adult child with a drug problem. They're divorced, and one parent is not wanting to enable. It's just saying, I'm not going to give you any more money. And the other parent is constantly bailing out the drug addict and thinking that she's somehow doing the right thing, but she's really just enabling this child. And that child is really probably needs to suffer the consequences of the addiction until he wants to get help.
Yeah. And it's so scary because some of the consequences are they die of an overdose.
Yeah.
You know, and we've had that, you know, in our ministry, and consequences of stupidity is sometimes death. And it no parent wants to see that happen. And so
hard.
It's a terrible dance of, you know, of what to do. But yeah, you're not going to change him by helping him be more dysfunctional.
So Leslie, I know there are a lot of listeners that are going to listen to this episode and they're going to go gung-ho on setting some boundaries, which is great. Then they're maybe going to get criticized for being unforgiving or not having empathy or being controlling. Or how do they deal with the criticism when they start to implement boundaries and that's uncomfortable for their spouse?
Whenever we try to do something new, I think it's always helpful to have support. Other people who are on your side, other people who are on your team. You know, if I'm starting to eat healthy and, you know, my husband doesn't want to eat healthy, you know, he may say, oh, you're ruining our fun. I like going out for pizza once a week. I like eating ice cream every night. You know, and he might be right. You know, I liked it too. So if I'm starting to eat healthy, there's a temptation to say, oh, forget it. You know,
right.
All that kind of stuff. And so it's easier if you have some support where other people are understanding that tension and understanding that criticism so that you don't feel so alone and it's not personal. You know, it's not personal, like I'm bad because I'm ruining our party. That would be one thing. The second thing I would think is understand that people may not like your boundaries because once you start having them, they can't use you or take advantage of you or pressure you as easily as they used to. And so they're going to give you some kickback, either manipulative kickback or critical, harsher kickback, but they're going to fight and scream. And that just gives you information like, wow, this person doesn't respect me. I'm just here for them. I'm here to give to them. I'm here to do for them. But when I talk about me and what I like and what I don't like and what I want and what I don't want and what I'm willing to do and what I'm not willing to do, I'm not allowed to be a person. I'm just an object to use. It's sort of like, this is my cell phone and I love my cell phone. I use it every day often. I'm looking at it. I'm checking things. I'm grateful that it works for me, but I don't really care about it. I mean, I care that it works for me. But if my cell phone had a boundary and said, Leslie, I am tired of you using me every hour to check your email. I'm only going to allow you to check your email 3 times a day or once a day. My cell phone, if I have that boundary, I'm okay with that. I'm only checking my email once a day. But if my cell phone said to me, I'm turning off the rest of the day, you're not allowed to use me, guess what I'm going to do?
Get another cell phone.
I'm going to get another cell phone. That's not okay. You're not allowed to have a boundary cell phone. You're here to be useful to me. That's your purpose.
You're an object.
Yeah, you're an object to use, not a person to love. And so sometimes our relationships are just like that. And you won't know that until you start speaking up. So if my cell phone started speaking up, it would learn really quickly. I like you, but only as an object.
You know, Leslie, that reminds me of how I talk to Alexa, you know, and we joke around the house sometimes because Alexa sounds like a person.
Yeah. She'll even butt in your conversation sometimes.
Right. I know. And sometimes, you know, but then she'll also give me the wrong information or whatever. And so sometimes we'll joke and be like, Alexa, you are so dumb or whatever. And Alexa will come back and say, well, that's not very nice. But, you know, we're talking to a computer. And so we don't really care about Alexa's feelings. But if Alexa was real, I'd never say that because you care.
Well, you hope.
Yeah, right.
This is hard medicine for so many people to hear. But people show you what they're like. And when they show you what they're like, believe them. Mm. And so when they act like you're an object and wait a minute, you can't have a boundary. You're here for me. I mean, I would have that response to my cell phone if it talked back to me and had a boundary. So if you start saying, hey, this is my boundary, I won't live like that, and you get mocked, or you get, hey, you're not allowed to do that, you're just the wife. Understand, that's information for you. This is the type of relationship that you have with someone. You have a I-it relationship. It, not I-thou. When you have an I-thou relationship, then I'm a person and you're a person. I care about you. You care about me. But when I have an I-it relationship, I use you to serve me. And I might really love you. I love my cell phone, as long as you do what you're supposed to do. And when you start having boundaries, no, we're not having that. I'm getting a different cell phone. And that's why I think so many women in our population are aghast when they start having boundaries. Their husband finds another woman.
Yeah.
He discards them, divorces them, and he's got a new relationship in 3 months because he's not in it for a relationship. He's in it for the I, it. You serve me, you give me sex, you make my food, you do my laundry, you take care of my kids, you clean my house, you pay my bills, or I pay the bills, but you do everything I want you to do. And as long as you do that, we're good. Just like as long as my cell phone functions like a cell phone should, we're good. Mm-hmm. And if it starts giving me problems, I'm getting a new cell phone. Mm-hmm.
I would really recommend you write down these boundaries or these things that you're learning and pray over them. And really take time to think about what are your boundaries or your rules for yourself and the things that you will put up with and the things that you won't, and then begin to live them out, because this can really be a life-changing thing to learn boundaries and how to live by your own boundaries.
Yeah, thanks, Julie. I think that's so important. And it's not about I'm right and you're wrong. It's a matter of, this is who I am. Arizona isn't any more right than Utah, right? But they have different boundaries and they have different cultures and different vibes to their state. And that's okay. God has made us diverse. He's made us different. And it's imperative for you to become fully mature, which means you have to know who God made you to be. And how you know that is by establishing some of your values. Like, you know, a sunflower is different than a rose, is different than a tulip, is different than a hosta plant. They're just all plants, but they're different. And God made great diversity in this world.
It's incredible.
Yeah, but some plants need a lot of sun. Some plants need a lot of shade. Some plants need a lot of water. Some plants don't function well with water at all. And it's important that you know who you are and how God made you, and that you have boundaries around things that harm you. Like if a desert plant went tropics, it couldn't survive, right? It has some boundaries. I need dry. I need sun, not cold, not snow, not rain, not a lot of water. It's not going to function well in there. And that's not selfish. That's stewardship. And that's important for you to know how God made you.
As a West Coast girl who moved to the Midwest, it was a little bit of a culture shock out here because it is so different and the culture is a little bit different. And in some ways to this day, and I've been out here for a long time, I don't totally fit in because of the way I was born and raised and maybe think and believe a little bit. I like it out here, don't get me wrong, but there's a difference. And then I have these friends that are down in Louisiana and I go down and visit them and it's hilarious, Leslie. I mean, I don't think their son has ever worn a pair of shoes and he's got all these duck call whistles and he shows them to me. He took me out in his mud boat and he is just redneck through and through. Shot my first gun down there and it was great fun, but it's very, very different, but not bad, not good. I think that's what you're saying.
Yeah. And I think that's part of, if we don't know who we are and we're not taking a stand, it's like part of growing up, and I'll close with this, is learning what you like, what you don't like, what you want, what you don't want. And so let's just use food as a metaphor. Right? So as you grow up, you try different things and you come to like things that maybe you didn't like. Like I like avocados as an adult. I did not like them as a child. I like salmon as an adult that I did not like as a child. So your taste can change and your boundaries would change. But if you don't know what you like, you don't know what's good for you, you don't know what your preferences are, then how can you make good choices? Because then you're just going to defer your choices to someone else who knows. And just because they like sushi or they like crab, like I like salmon, but I don't like crab. It doesn't agree with my body. And so knowing what you like and what you don't like and what's good for you and what's not good for you and what makes you cranky if you eat it and what makes you happy if you eat it, all those kind of things are really important things in terms of food. But what about other stuff? Like, do you know what a perfect day would be for you? How do you like to pace your day? What kind of environment do you like? What kind of environment feeds your soul? What kind of environment sucks you dry? If you don't pay any attention to that, then you can't put yourself in an environment where you thrive more naturally versus languish in an environment that doesn't feed you. Or what kind of people do you enjoy being around? All of that is important for you to learn about yourself, not in a self-centered, I'm the most important person in this world, but so that you show up as yourself, as God called you to be, in your best. This little light of mine, I'm going to let it shine. But if you don't even know what this light shines as, this tulip needs to shine as a tulip. It's not a sunflower. And for women, we start looking at the sunflowers and say, well, why aren't I more like that? That look, that's so beautiful and so big and bold. And I'm just this measly little tulip and I'm just not that big. And I'm, you know, kind of yellow and look at how bright that yellow. And we compare and then we feel inadequate when God says, I didn't make you that. Quit trying to be that. I made you you and be the best you you can be.
That's good. Thank you, Leslie.
Thanks, Julie.
Thank you for listening to Relationship Truth Unfiltered. If you need clarity on whether your marriage is difficult, disappointing, or destructive, go right now to leslievernick.com/start. It's totally private and will help you get clear on your next step. Until next time, may God bless all of your relationships with Him, with yourself, and with others.